There'll be days like this when there's no one complaining. There'll be days like this. Everything falls into place like the flick of a switch. Well, my mama told me there'll be days like this.
It's Matt Hoy sitting in for Dave Congleton on the Dave Congleton Show on KVEC News Talk 920 AM and 96.5 FM. We're going to start out today on a little bit of a lighter note. We have on the phone with us Jamie Stonemeyer of Stonemeyer Games, and Jamie makes board games, which are really making a comeback now nowadays. Jamie, it's good to have you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me.
So, tell us a little bit. I know people can find your board games in a lot of stores, especially, you know, board game stores here in SLO. We've got one called Captain Nemo, and I know they carry some of your games. Tell me, how did you get started making board games?
Well, I've been playing board games my whole life, and even at a pretty young age, 6, 7 years old, I was designing games for fun. And then many years later, Kickstarter started to become a thing. It was a kind of a fun, exciting platform, and I started to see board games show up on Kickstarter. So I thought, okay, you know, all my life I've made these games for fun. I'll design a game and put it on Kickstarter and see how it does. So that kind of launched my company when my first game, Viticulture, funded on Kickstarter in 2012.
And Viticulture, explain a little bit about what Viticulture is and how that's played, because that would be an interest here. Central Coast of California, we make a lot of wine.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, Viticulture is a game about running a vineyard. In Viticulture, it's set in Tuscany, but it could be set anywhere in the world. You're just running a vineyard. You're attracting visitors to your vineyard. You're planting vines, and you're harvesting grapes, and you're turning them into wine. And so you're kind of making these little creative choices throughout the game, depending on how you want to build your own vineyard and how you want to treat the people that show up at your vineyard. It's a competitive game. You can play it against up to 5 other people. It's a 6-player game.
Yeah, I've played it with friends, and I just, you know, third place the first time, and so that was a little disappointing, but I'm convinced they cheated. So you started out, Kickstarter funded that, and now this is your full-time business, right?
That's right, yeah. Yeah, I ran a few projects on Kickstarter through 2013 and then decided to give it a chance and go full-time. So I've been full-time running Stonemeyer Games for about 5 years now.
Okay. What you said you've been playing, you know, as young, you know, starting out when you were a kid, and I know we, you know, lots of us did, you know, from Candyland to Monopoly and whatnot. Mm-hmm. You know, those games, I guess Candyland, if you have small children, still great. But, you know, most of the games I played as a kid, I wouldn't play nowadays as an adult. They just aren't fun. What has happened in the past, I don't know, 10 or 15 years where, you know, you've got more adults looking at these games and playing these games? That used to be just, you know, it was something for kids. And once you grew up, you stopped playing board games.
Right, right. Well, I think a few things have happened. And you're describing some games where there's a lot of luck. And I think that's great for kids when kids aren't maybe, they haven't quite developed the ability to make decisions. So, you know, rolling a few dice and moving a piece is good for a kid to learn how to count or match a color with a space on the board on Candyland. Mm-hmm. But there are... Even back then, there were some more strategic games, and there are a lot more now. And I think there are a few different reasons. One, I think, is that there's been a rise of video games, both on the computer and on consoles and on our phones, you know, little mobile games. So I think gaming is much more ingrained into our culture in many different ways than it was 30 years ago. And so I think it's more of an acceptable thing to do, whether you're doing it on your own or with friends. I think board games go hand in hand with that and have had a resurgence, as partially at least related to that.
Mm-hmm.
I think Kickstarter's had a big part to do with it. The board games on Kickstarter are a huge thing. And so Kickstarter does this really good thing where when someone backs a project on Kickstarter, it sends an email to that person's friends who have friended them on Kickstarter. So even if you back that project completely unrelated to board games at some point, and you and I are friends, then you might see later on that when I back a board game project, you're going to get a notification about that. So I think there's a lot more awareness through that platform. And I also think one of my little theories is that for every generation that plays these more strategic board games and gets into them, they often end up playing them with their kids if they have kids. Mm-hmm. And those kids grow up, and they're into board games as well. So I think it's kind of this cyclical, exponential growth industry that we've seen blossom in recent years.
Yeah, and so, you know, the thing that kind of got me as an adult in my mid-20s back in, at least even interested in board games, was some friends introduced me to Settlers of Catan.
Yeah, yeah.
And that, to me, I mean, you can find that nowadays in Target, which right. is, you know, it used to be, you know, it used to be there were two types of kind of board games. There were board games for kids, and then there were party-type games for groups of people.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, you know, you're looking at Trivial Pursuit, Cranium, that sort of stuff.
Right.
But there's been a big change and just an explosion of games. So in addition to Viticulture, what your latest game that I've seen a lot of, and this is another thing if you could talk about, you know, the rules for these games can seem a little daunting at first. You know, it's not Candyland level rules. It's, you know, you can place things here or there, and you've got decisions to make. What kind of impact has, you know, things like YouTube and Watch It Played or Board Game Geek kind of had in making games more accessible?
Yeah, that's a great question, because you're right. It can be intimidating to open up a game that looks really exciting and beautiful and find that it has a 20-page rulebook inside. And I think a few of the things that have really helped people, help remove that barrier to entry, like you mentioned, are YouTube. There are many different creators on YouTube, like a channel called Watch It Played, where on Watch It Played, there's a guy named Rodney who kind of just sits down with you on the video and shows you how to play, and he tells you everything you need to know how to play, not just a quick overview. And so I've seen people even at conventions sit down with their phones with Watch It Played on the table, and they, instead of reading the rule book for a game at a convention, they'll watch Rodney teach them how to play the game. So I think there's that, and I think kind of this exponential growth idea, as more people get into these types of board games, more people know how to play them. So even if you don't know how to play one of our games, you might know someone else who does, and you might have a few games that you took the time to learn the rules for, and you can teach your friends as well. So I think it kind of just gets, like in my group, my gaming group, there's a lot of that, where I might learn a game, but then the next week someone else might learn a game.
Mm-hmm. So it seems like your latest hit game for you is something called Scythe. Can you explain to me, you know, what that's about, how, and kind of what makes that game kind of unique? Because I've heard a lot of people talk about it. I know you've got like expansion packs coming out for it and whatnot.
Yeah. Scythe is it's a game. It has a kind of a unique story, because Scythe didn't start with an idea, really. It started with some art that I found online. There was this artist who was creating this beautiful alternate history Eastern Europe world, and his paintings look like old paintings, but they have kind of giant mech robots walking around in them, and the people in the paintings are often like farmers out in the middle of the country, and they're not bothered by these mechs. They're just part of their world. So this really captured my imagination, and I ended up working with this artist to design Scythe. I put it on Kickstarter. It raised $1.8 million on Kickstarter, so it got a pretty good audience from the beginning. And that was a few years ago. Now there's over 250,000 copies of Scythe in print around the world. It's a pretty heavy game. There are lots of decisions that you can make in this game. But I've seen people that really get into it based on the world, whether it's the world or the mechanisms in the game, or all the various expansions that have come out that kind of add new layers to the game. But yeah, it's been huge for our company, and it's a pretty well-known game in the hobby world as well.
Great. We're talking with Jamie Stonemeyer of Stonemeyer Games and Board Games. If you're interested in asking Jamie some questions, please give us a call, 805-543-8830 or 1-800-549-5832. We'll be back right after this.
I said, take it easy, baby. I worked all day and my feet feel just like lead. You got my shirt tail flying all over the place and the sweat popping out of my head. She said, hey, bossing over, baby, keep on working, for there's ain't no time to quit. She said, go bossing over, baby, keep on dancing. I'm about to have myself a fit.
You're listening to Matt Hoy, guest hosting for Dave Congleton as he recovers from heart surgery. Big heart, so big surgery. And we hope to have him back soon. I'm here talking with Jamie Stonemeyer, Stonemeyer Games, about board games and kind of the resurgence they're having nowadays. Kind of the, I think it's kind of the golden age for board games. I noticed, Jamie, you know, you've got the Scythe game that you came out with some time ago. And, you know, most of these games are targeted probably for teenagers and up. You've got a version called My Little Scythe that looks – and this one, it's using your kind of, you know, intellectual property, but it wasn't designed by you.
That's right, yeah. About 2 years ago, a father and daughter, a father who loved Scythe and his five-year-old daughter who desperately wanted to play Scythe but just didn't quite grasp it, they got together and they designed, just for fun, kind of a family version of Scythe, a simpler version. And it got so much traction online. I saw some posts about it, and people just kept talking and talking about it, that I asked this father, his name is Hobie, if he could send me a prototype of the game so I could check it out. And I was surprised how delighted I was as an adult playing the game, and I could only imagine that people would had that much fun playing with their kids. So we decided to publish it. It was originally My Little Pony themed, but very specific intellectual property. So we yes. moved away from that and kind of made our own theme for this family version of Scythe.
So you're publishing your games designed by you. You're publishing games designed by other people now. So, mm-hmm. You know, when are you taking over Hasbro?
Hasbro has billions of dollars. We're pretty small, very small company in relation to Hasbro.
What sort of games are you playing? What you know when that aren't you know made by you? What are the ones that kind of capture your imagination and you find yourself going back to time and time again?
Yeah, you know, I actually just posted my top 10 list of favorite games the other day, so I'll mention a few of them. There's a game called Time Stories that plays a little bit like a movie, really. It's very cinematic, but players are still making a lot of in-stream decisions. I love Time Stories. There's a great little two-player game called Hanamikoji, where you're trying to bluff against a single other player that you're playing against. And there's a really great, actually, there's a company called Restoration Games that takes older games, like those games that we talked about earlier, that may not have had as many interesting choices as they could have because they were designed many, many years ago, mm-hmm. and they refurbish them and bring them up to modern standards. One of those games is called Downforce. It's a car racing game, mm-hmm. and the modern version is fantastic.
So if somebody's interested in let me ask you this. When you get the first idea for a game, mm-hmm. how long does it take to go from kind of getting the idea to the final project, and how many times do you run through gameplay and tweak rules and change the values of whatever to get to a game that you release and it's fun, it's competitive, and it's fair?
I really like the way you asked that for a variety of reasons, but the short answer is usually about 18 to 24 months of development. And the reason I like the way you said this is because a lot of people come to us and say, hey, I've got an idea for a board game. Will you buy this idea from me? And I usually tell them, I think it's great that you have an idea for a board game, but the idea is, like, I have plenty of ideas. A lot of people have plenty of ideas.
The idea is the easy part.
It's much harder to actually build the first prototype even and get it to the table with your friends and then test it a dozen times and then 100 times and make sure everything is as fun and functional and balanced and intuitive as possible. That takes a lot of work. So when people submit games to us, where I'm looking for the people who have done all that work, and I can just take it and add the art and the marketing and the production, that side of things.
So what sorts of What sorts of games out there, you know, what? How can you tell what may be the next big thing? I know Euphoria and Viticulture are kind of in the category of called worker placement games, where you, you know, you have a finite number of workers and you've got to choose what they do each turn to best maximize, you know, whatever the conditions are for victory. They've got what are called deck building games out there. Marvel and DC have promote those quite a bit because they've got all of these characters and all this intellectual property that they can churn out expansion after expansion. And those games, you build up a deck by recruiting, you know, cards and whatnot to better your hand. Is there something out there that's the next big thing? I think the game of the year last year was, for a lot of people, was a game called Gloomhaven, which is a $100+ board game that is kind of Dungeons and Dragons-ish slash strategy, combat strategy.
Yeah.
So what do you think is kind of the next big thing out there? Is there something up and coming that's a type of game that's you see maybe catching on soon? Or,
well, if I knew that, I would love if I knew that exactly. because whenever I work on a new game, we put a lot of time and effort into it, and we never really know how it'll do until it actually gets to market. Mm-hmm. But we are a little fortunate in this case in that a game that we announced and pre-released in early January has actually kind of been that game this year. It's a game called Wingspan. It's a bird-themed game about collecting birds, and it's in this category called engine building, where the things that you do at the beginning of the game as you're playing these birds out, you're not very good at them at that point in the game, but by the end of the game, you've built this engine and you are really good at them. And so the things that you're doing at the end of the game feel really good and really powerful. And this game has been, it's been very successful, even though it hasn't even released in retail yet. So it actually releases to retail on Friday, and we've just been amazed by the response to it so far. So we're kind of hoping that it'll be this year's Gloomhaven, even though it's very different in theme and mechanisms from a big, heavy adventure game like Gloomhaven.
Yeah, I'm looking at the art on this, and it looks, Audubon Society quality.
Yeah.
Images of various birds, and so
that's right.
If people want to order that game or order any of your games, where can they go?
They can go. There are a couple different options. They can go to our website. Our website is StillmeyerGames.com. They can go to their local game shop. You mentioned that you have a local game store there. They can buy our games there. And then there are online places. They can go to places like Miniature Market or Cool Stuff Inc. or Amazon. Our games are there too.
Jamie, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it. Stonemeyer Games, Jamie Stonemeyer. This is the Dave Conklin Show on KVEC.
KVEC.
This is Matt Hoy sitting in for Dave Congleton on the Dave Congleton Show. KVEC News Talk 920 AM, 96.5 FM. I got 30 minutes until we got our next guest. And I'm just going to give you a kind of a rundown here of what I've got planned here over the next couple days for you while I sit in for Dave. Coming up at the 4 o'clock hour, we have Noah Rothman, Associate Editor of Commentary Magazine and author of Unjust. Then we are going to have Rick, and I hope I'm pronouncing his name right. I get the sort of stuff wrong all the time. I think it's Uhls, U-H-L-S, who is the pastor of the United Methodist Church San Luis Obispo. He's going to talk with us. You know, he's going to talk with us about the conference the Methodists had last week and how that affects LGBTQ, I butcher that. LGBTQ.
Is it TQ?
I think it's TQ. Members and churches here in the West. And at the 6 o'clock hour, we're going to have Walt Heyer on. Walt is a born a man. He became a woman for a few years, and then he's back to a man, and he's doesn't think this transgenderism is a good idea for a lot of people. So that's going to be very interesting. Tomorrow, I'm super stoked because the 3 o'clock hour, we have Dan Walters is going to be talking with. Dan is the former Sacramento Bee, Sacramento Bureau Chief. He is a longtime columnist. If there is anyone who knows more about California politics than Dan Walters, his name is Willie Brown. And we're going to talk with him about what to expect from Gavin Newsom as governor, this high-speed rail mess, and you know what kind of the future of California politics here is. I've also tomorrow got Casey Johnson. I'm not sure if any of you have seen it. The lead story in the Tribune today is about changes to California's laws and how colleges and universities deal with sexual assault claims. And the headline on this Tribune story is California court ruling could deter college students from reporting sexual assault. We're going to talk with Casey Johnson, who wrote a book on the Duke lacrosse case and has been following what frankly has been a lack of due process in this sort of situation for many years. So he's going to talk about that. As for right now, you know, got a half an hour. Craig says, talk about what I know. So we're going to talk about guns. For those of you who are not aware of this, Oklahoma has now decided to go Wild West. Oklahoma governor there signed a law establishing what is known as constitutional carry. If you are legally allowed to own and carry a gun, you can carry a gun without having any training, without having to get a permit.
Concealed or not concealed,
concealed or not concealed or open, what they call open carry, is if you know you can see it on their hips. So either way, if you're legally allowed to carry it, you're allowed to do that without having to get a permit. That takes effect November 1st, so it's not legal yet, so you got to wait a few months.
I'd love to do that, because the idea of concealed carry, it sounds great. Like, okay, you have your gun inside your shirt or whatever. I can agree with that. But the problem is when they enforce it and you can't have what they call an imprint, meaning
it's called printing.
Printing. Yeah, you can't have it. You can't make it known that you have a gun by the fact that you can tell the outline through your shirt. I mean, and that's for someone of my Zoftig size, and I'm not getting.
And I know where you're coming from,
Matt. You might know. It's very difficult not to print on your shirt, because clothes are tight on us.
Right.
Especially around the middle regions.
Right, where you would normally
have a piece.
Well, the thing is, and you know, this gets wrong a lot of the times. I've seen cases in pictures of guys in other states who are not big like us, who are slim guys, who are still wearing very tight shirts, and it's obvious as the day is long that they've got a gun on under. I mean, it's not.
I think they're called bros. Oh, you know, when they wear the medium shirt and they're all jacked.
Yeah.
Like, woo, bro.
And you can. But here's the thing. It's they'll warn you about this. Oh, it's illegal if you print. It's not illegal. Okay. It's not necessarily smart, but it's not illegal. That is. Someone being able to see the outline of your gun is not the same as pulling out the gun and waving it around, which is brandishing, which is illegal. So
if I wore a shirt and you could see clearly the outline of a gun,
well, in this state, you're probably going to get stopped. You're probably going to get in trouble.
Exactly. Yeah.
But it's not technically illegal. Although I definitely wouldn't do it in San Francisco. You do it in Fresno, it's not really a big deal.
No.
And the thing, so, you know, open carry, you can do that. The reason why I personally don't like open carry is if you're somewhere and the bad, you know, generally bad guys conceal. Mm-hmm. You know, bad guys aren't walking around with a gun on their hip. If you're open carrying and a bad guy decides he's going to do some harm, you're the first target. I mean, that's just, it just makes sense from their point of view. If I see that you've got a gun, you are the first person I'm going to sneak up behind and shoot in the back.
But you could be also a deterrent. Let's say somebody wants to rob a liquor store and they see you're standing
there. If all
they've
got's a knife, yeah.
even if they have a gun, they're like, they're here to point the gun, to threaten, right, to get the money. They're not here to actually shoot anybody. And if they see somebody in there with a gun, then they're going to think twice. Like, maybe I shouldn't hit this target.
For some, that's the case. For others, you know, it's tough to tell, and I wouldn't want to play the odds on that one, frankly.
It's kind of like when you put a sign out in front of your house that says, this house is secured by
Smith & Wesson.
It's deterring the attempt.
Right.
And I think, you know, a case could be made that having a gun at your side could deter the attempt.
Certainly. But like I said, it also makes you a target if they are really determined. So that's what, you know, don't be surprised if you're traveling across the country, you go through Oklahoma and see a lot of people with guns on their
heads. Don't freak out like in the movie Miss Congeniality, where she sees the guy with a gun and they tackle him and realize, oh, it's Texas.
Yeah.
He can do that. But I'm wondering how easy is it to get a concealed carry in this? Is it by county?
In California?
Well, is it by county or is it by state?
Well, okay.
Like if I wanted to get one, where do I go?
Where do you live?
Los Osos.
You live in Los Osos, you are going to go to Ian Parkinson's, the county sheriff's department. That's right. Where you're going to go. If you live in SLO, you are going to go to the police chief. They're going to write you a letter denying it and saying, if you want a gun, go to the county sheriff. Technically, the way the law is written in California, it is your county or your city chief of police or the county sheriff. So there are some cities which will issue a permit. For the most part, it's usually county sheriffs. So I know Atascadero did a thing a year or so ago where if you live in Atascadero, you can apply for a permit through the police chief there. The one downside with that, and the law allows for this, but it's, frankly, it's a little odious, is City of Atascadero requires you to see a shrink before they will give you.
Can they legally do that?
That is legal. That is part. They can require that. They'll send you the same shrink they send their police officers to make sure that you're not, you know, don't have a hero complex or something like that.
Now, do you have to? If you live in the city, do you have to automatically go to the city first, or can you just go straight to the sheriff?
Generally, you want to go to the city first.
But do you have to?
That's up to the sheriff. If you want to go to the sheriff instead of going to, you know, if you live in a task area, you want to go to the sheriff instead of going to the chief of police, you know, go to the sheriff. The worst he can say is go to the city.
Yeah, so you probably just should go to him first. And now how is it known to he's very lax as far as giving them out?
There is a website called calguns.net. I'd encourage, you know, if you're interested in this sort of thing, it's got message boards and all that sort of stuff, and it's got a sub message board for concealed carry based on the county you live in. And San Luis Obispo County is somewhere in the middle as far as whether the sheriff will issue you a permit. There are counties like Fresno County, most of the counties in the far north or the far east of the state are practically shall issue. You've got to, according to state law, you've got to have a good reason. And for those counties, saying, I want to be able to defend myself and my family is good enough reason.
That's a reason.
For counties like San Francisco, San Diego, Los Angeles, a lot of ones around Bay Area, you have to know someone. You have to be a Hollywood star. You have to have spent thousands of dollars. You know,
somebody currently shooting at you.
Maybe not.
We'll issue you a shield.
Yeah, it's, well, take out a restraining order.
Yeah.
San Luis Obispo, somewhere in the middle. If you have a good reason that's a little bit more than just wanting to defend yourself. If you carry around a large, you know, if you're a jeweler, if your job is to restock those ATM machines in 7-Elevens and you carry around a lot of cash, those sorts of things will typically get you, allow you to get a permit.
Because I remember that it says in the Constitution that as long as you carry a lot of money or diamonds, you can bear
arms. As long as you're rich and you know people, you're allowed to bear arms.
That's what it says.
So, yeah, it's... you know, we'll continue talking about this, but San Luis Obispo somewhere in the middle, and we're going to see pretty quick because we got for the first time since 2010, the U.S. Supreme Court is going to take a gun case. I'll talk about that, what that is, a little bit later after the break. But they're taking a gun case, and there is worry among those people who don't want anyone except the cops and the military to have guns that this could. Even though it looks kind of innocuous, this could bust open the floodgates on the right to keep and bear arms, as in carry them around. So we'll see. That's a case out of New York. I've actually been doing quite a bit of research on gun laws in states like California, New York, New Jersey, Hawaii. I thought we had it bad here in California. Compared to New York... this is a gun owner's paradise.
Well, let's hit that when we come back from the break.
Yeah.
Cal Guns, Take Me Away.
You're listening to the Dave Congleton Show on News Talk 920 KVEC, also 96.5 FM. This is Matt Hoy in for Dave Congleton, recovering from heart surgery. And we are talking gun laws here for the next few minutes until our next guest. Our next guest is Noah Rothman, author of Unjust, Social Justice and the Unmaking of America. But as far as gun laws here, latest news is Oklahoma is one of... As the 16th state to okay constitutional carry. The other ones where it doesn't require anything for you to carry a gun are... Now I've lost the list.
I'm betting it's not
New
York.
Here we go. Alaska, Arizona, Idaho, Kansas, Maine, Mississippi, Missouri, New Hampshire, North Dakota, South Dakota, Vermont, West Virginia, and Wyoming... and most of Arkansas and Montana.
Just send me that list because that's my possibly moving to list. Because it's not that I necessarily want to or don't want to, and I may or may not have a license already. What I'm saying is I like places that let me do what I want to do and leave me alone.
Yes.
It's like I don't do anything wrong. I mean, I really don't have any vices other than cigars. But
people just want to be left alone.
I just want to be left. Look, I want to live on 50 acres minimum away from everyone and have everyone stay out of my business and just let me live my life. I will let you live your life. I'll live mine. I promise I'll wash my hands when I leave the house. You do the same. Other than that, I don't want to deal with the government getting into my business.
The other interesting thing about this is 2019. I'll get the year right. This is 2019. In the year 2000, there was only one permitless carry or constitutional carry state. It was Vermont. In the past 19 years, you've got 15 others that have joined it. The rate of gun crimes over this past 20 years has gone down. Causation, correlation, you can argue about that all you want, but it hasn't turned into the Wild West.
One thing you can't say is that it is increasing crime.
You can't say that. So, speaking of New York, I've been doing some research on New York. New York is an absolute nightmare to get a gun, at least in the city. It's a little easier in some counties. But in the city, it's going to take you at least 6 months to go through the process. It's going to cost you several hundred dollars, and then maybe you get a permit. It's not even for sure you'll get a permit, and you will not get a permit to carry it. You won't, unless you are a Hollywood actor or you know someone, or as they charged a guy and put him in jail recently, you pay money under the table to one of the cops in the in the licensing mm-hmm. division. But in New York, again, it will cost you several hundred dollars to get it, and then you will only have permission to basically keep it in your home. You can't carry it around. You can take the gun unloaded in one locked container, then you have to have a different locked container for the ammo. And you can go to and from one of the six or seven ranges that are in the city. Now, the law that the Supreme Court is hearing this term is a law that applies to New York City that basically says if we've issued you a permit and allowed you to buy a gun, that you can keep it at home or you can take it to one of the six ranges or six or seven ranges that are in the city. If you want to take it to a range in upstate New York, you may not. If you want to take it to a competition or something, a shooting competition in Vermont, you may not. If you take it out of the city, you're a felon.
Oh, my God. That's
the law.
I can tell you right now, even in New York, that law is not going to stand.
Well, that's what everyone I think most people will agree with you that that's what the Supreme Court's going to do. The worry among people who are pushing for a lot of gun control is that the Supreme Court is going to take this case as an opportunity to set the standard at which you can tell whether a gun control law is valid or not. And what they're afraid of is that the Supreme Court's going to say you need to subject any gun control law to what's called strict scrutiny, which is the highest level of scrutiny for any of these laws. So you have to show that whatever law you pass has a factual basis behind it, that it is very narrowly tailored to what you're trying to accomplish.
Just arbitrary.
It can't be, if a gun looks like this, you can't have it. It's and the belief is, even among gun control advocates, that is if the Supreme Court says strict scrutiny is the standard, then there are very, very few gun control laws that will withstand it. Your assault weapons bans are gone. Your bans, the California's got a law right now that basically you have not, if you are a member of the public, you have not been able to buy a new model of a firearm since 2013. So any gun, any manufacturer's made since 2013, you cannot buy it in California because it doesn't have the ability to micro-stamp the cartridge.
That's what I'm going through right now. I want my Springfield XDE. Can't get it in California. But you can get it if a cop buys it and then chooses not to own it, and maybe he says, I don't like this, I'm going to sell it. Then you can own it.
Yes.
And it's just ridiculous. I went to the gun store a few weeks ago, and I was asking about what's the difference between this one and this one. And he said, well, this one's legal, this one's not. And they were the exact same gun. One was green, one was black. And I said, why not? Is it because of, like, camouflage, green, yada, yada? And he goes, no, it's because each time they change the color, they have to resubmit it to the California process to review whether they're going to legalize it. And it's extremely expensive. And if all you're going to do is make a color change, it's not financially wise to resubmit every single color model.
And the thing is, I keep on hoping that someday somebody takes a police department to the cleaners over this, because what it is the list that you of guns that you and I can buy is what's known as the not unsafe handguns list. Okay, and again, this was a way Schwarzenegger signed this bill into existence. Over the years, the number of gun models available for purchase in California, I think we're at half what we were when it was passed. And, you know, it's been taken to court. District court judge said, well, as long as you can buy one gun, you know, as long as there's one model on the list, it doesn't infringe your Second Amendment rights. It's like, okay, as long as there's one book available in the bookstore, it doesn't infringe your First Amendment rights. It's just crazy. So, you know, they do this not unsafe handgun list. And a few years back, Kamala Harris said, hey, micro stamping's a thing. and the technology is out there. And so now this requirement that they put in the law requires guns to microstamp. And that what that is when you fire the gun, the shell casing that contains the primer and the gunpowder, it's supposed to imprint a small serial number on that in two places and not on the primer. And no one can do that. It's not, you know, they say it's theoretically possible. It's not. They've kind of tweaked it to say, okay, well, you can put it on the primer twice. But, you know, okay, you're going to commit a crime, and you go to the gun range the week before, and you grab a whole bunch of brass that's on the ground and just toss it out there. And now you've implicated five other people who had nothing to do with it.
Yeah, it was funny because you're saying that. I'm like, wait, microprinting? I didn't know guns did that.
They don't. They don't. So that's our gun law update for today. You are listening to the Dave Conklin Show on News Talk 920 KVEC, 96.5 on the FM dial. We'll be right back with Noah Rothman, author of Unjust.